You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Good morning, friend. Welcome into the Mike Allen Show. Some of you back in the saddle today after the holiday weekend, New Year's Day, on Sunday this year, and of course Monday then. Typically the day off. Even the mail carriers got the day off yesterday. So hopefully you're back in the saddle today, trying to shake off the rust, all that stuff that comes from being out. I got a head start on you, at least for this one of my my three jobs back in the studio yesterday, and had some technical glitches. We're hoping that's not the case today. Alex and I keeping our fingers crossed and all the rest. So great to have you with us. My second hour, we're going to do a quick turnaround on a guest. If you'll recall, the guest the last day before we took our Christmas break, Christmas holiday, was Father Tom Galloway, my Orthodox priest friend, who is the pastor of St. Andrew's Orthodox Church here in Lexington, where we broadcast from. Father Tom, when we parted ways on that Friday, I said, you know, we've got this common celebration liturgically of Christmas. You know, Christmas doesn't end with December 25th. It just gets started. And we have the Epiphany, of course, which will be celebrated this Sunday, traditionally on January 6th, but it's been abrogated to the nearest Sunday. But Father Tom's going to come back on today to talk about Christmas, Epiphany, maybe follow up on some things we talked about, like Russia and Syria. I also want his thoughts on the terror attack there in Istanbul, of course, Istanbul, known also as Constantinople. It was his historic Christian name. And, of course, being an Orthodox Christian, deep roots and appreciation for Constantinople and Istanbul. So we'll talk to Father Tom about all that and get caught up with him. Also want to talk more, something I was only able to scratch the surface on yesterday, a book I got for Christmas from my wife. You know, you're getting old when you ask for a book for Christmas. Might as well ask for socks and underwear. But I did ask for the book Silence, the novel by the Japanese Catholic Shusaku Endo, which was published, I think, 50 years ago, and now a major motion picture produced by Martin Scorsese, which he sees in many ways as a masterpiece that he has wanted to present for decades since he first encountered the novel. It's a book about the Japanese persecution of Christians in the 17th century. As we said yesterday, Christianity flourished in the latter part of the 16th century. St. Francis Xavier, one of the early Jesuits, who not long after the Portuguese made contact with the Far East, with Japan, and began to trade, it wasn't long before Christian missionaries like St. Francis Xavier and others arrived on the island and actually found a people and a culture very receptive to the Catholic faith. In fact, according to the statistics that I'm reading here, there was a community of over 200,000 converts, really not that far removed from St. Francis Xavier's first excursion onto the island. And there was a great flourishing not only of the faith, but also of reciprocity between the Japanese and Portugal. But to finally, that all changed in 1614 when there was an edict of expulsion in Japan, and the Japanese rulers began to see the Christian faith as a threat to Japanese culture, to Japanese autonomy and independence, and they began to look askance at Christianity and banned it from the country, expelled missionaries, and began to ruthlessly persecute the faith. It's in this setting that the novel Silence is set. The novel about two Portuguese missionary priests who travel to Japan in clandestine fashion to find out if a priest mentor of theirs in their life had, according to rumors, truly turned from the faith under persecution. and that tells the story really of one of those two priests and his own experience and being faced with the ultimate decision, the decision of whether or not he would deny his faith in the face of persecution. And there are some interesting things in the book that I want to get into a little bit, and it'll drive my question of the day, which I'll share with you in the next segment. Also, I want to talk about China. You know, the more things change, the more they stay the same. Why they really have nothing to worry about. Some stipulations that they have for rapprochement with the Vatican. And, of course, we'll get into all the other fun things today. We'll give our What Were You Thinking Award, look back in history, spin the dial catechism wheel, a quick run through sports, all of the rest. If you want to be on the program today, certainly you're welcome to do so. Give me a call or text 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4, or you can email me, MikeAllenShow@gmail.com, or you can post a thought on Facebook or on Twitter. Now, I don't envy my wife this morning. She has the task of trying to rouse our school-age children after this long break in which, you know, our house, we are not a regimented household. If you've ever been to my house, you'll understand exactly what I mean in terms of kids getting in bed and, you know, like clockwork and all the rest. And so my 15-year-old and our 11-year-old have both been accustomed to the wee hours of the night and then sleeping until 10 or 11 o'clock in the morning. So that's all changing in a harsh, in a harsh way this morning. I don't envy my wife's task in trying to rouse them and get them out the door for school. You probably know exactly what I'm talking about. But man, it was a great break. It was nice to not have to go anywhere, you know what I mean? Because after having gone to Gatlinburg, which was been a great trip, family gathering we do every year with my mom and my two sisters and everything, and then the very next weekend turning right around and making that long drive to Raleigh, North Carolina for my nephew's wedding, just to be able to just decompress and to relax. And I was able, by God's grace, to have time off from all three of my different hats that I wear. Could sleep in a little bit myself, get caught up on, you know, watching some old movies, all the rest. It was nice. So, but I'm also glad to be back with you. So anyway, the readings today, we are still in the Christmas season, from 1 John chapter 2. If you consider that God is righteous, you also know that everyone who acts in righteousness is begotten by him. See what love the Father has bestowed on us. This is one of my favorite passages from the letters of John. See what love the Father has bestowed on us, that we may be called the children of God. Yet so we are. The reason the world does not know us is that it did not know him. Beloved, we are God's children now. What we shall be has not yet been revealed. We do know that when it is revealed, we shall be like him, for we shall see him as he is. Everyone who has this hope based on him makes himself pure as he is pure. If you went to Mass this past weekend on Sunday, you'll notice the first reading. It seemed almost a little bit out of place here on the octave day of Christmas, the solemnity of the Blessed Virgin Mary, the Mother of God. The first reading was this passage from the book of Numbers, the fourth book of the Old Testament, part of the Pentateuch. And it was what's called as the blessing of Aaron, or sometimes the Aaronic blessing. The Lord said to Moses, "Speak to Aaron and his sons and tell them, this is how you shall bless the Israelites. Say to them, the Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord let his face shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord look upon you kindly and give you peace." It's a beautiful blessing. You've probably heard it many times before. It's often used in faith-centered gatherings. It's used in the liturgy at times. There's some beautiful musical depictions of this blessing. The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord let his face shine upon you. Now, remember, this is a word that is coming to Moses. instructions for a blessing to give to the people. If anyone knew what it was for the Lord to let his face shine upon him and be gracious to you, it would be Moses. Moses, who spoke to God, the scriptures tell us, as one friend speaks to another. And as a result, his intimate meetings with God in the tent of meeting, his face, when he descended from atop Mount Sinai, his face shone with the glory of God, so much so that people were fearful of even going near him. So awesome was the radiance that emanated from his face. The Hebrews had a word for that, the Shekinah glory. And the prayer of blessing that Moses gives is through Aaron, is that they would be told, let the Lord let his face shine upon you and be gracious to you. Now you wonder, what does this have to do with the feast of the Blessed Virgin Mary, the Mother of God, the octave of Christmas? Well, my pastor helped me out with that Sunday in his homily. He remarked about how it was to see the face of God, which of course is the beatific vision. It's the dream of every baptized person. It's what sainthood is, to be so made so pure in heart and so perfected in love that we can gaze upon the pure and the holy, the terrible, in the proper way of understanding it, face of God. Well, here was the Blessed Virgin holding the infant, God in the flesh. Mary, did you know, indeed, looking at the face of God, this is the privilege of all those who belong to him and the hope that animates every day. Behold, what manner of love the Father has bestowed on us that we be called the children of God. We'll be back with more. This is the Mike Allen Show.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
Fifteen minutes past the hour, you're back on the Mike Allen Show. Here on Breadbox Media, if you want to learn more about what we do at Breadbox Media, then go to breadboxmedia.com. We're a fledgling startup, apostolate enterprise, I guess you could say, and we really need support. We need support in prayer, support in your encouragement, and to what degree you can partner with us or help promote what we're doing in your local parish. We need that help, too, because we believe that there's something markedly different about this particular media enterprise, and that we really are seeking to be right in the heart of the faith. Sometimes it's easy for the faith to be kind of swept up in partisan politics, either on the right or on the left. There can be a tendency sometimes to equate I've seen, at least in some media enterprises, to equate the Catholic faith with conservatism or the Republican Party. Then there are others who want to do it on the left as well with the Democratic Party. And as we've said many times, and of course we took some grief for this during the last presidential election, there is no one party, there is no one political platform that fully encapsulates and expresses the truths of the Catholic faith. And so in many ways, even though one may certainly be registered in a political party, and we certainly believe in being active in the public square, and we have this dual citizenship, this citizenship in heaven, as well as a citizenship in our locality. And we should be the best citizens of our place of residence that we can be. But to a degree, we will always be this side of the veil, as Catholics, politically homeless, because you will never find a party that embraces the fullness of the truth about the human person, and that sees every human person from conception, from the tiniest unborn human person all the way through to the dignity of the poor and all those who are at society's margins, and then ultimately those who are at the end of life, who are oftentimes viewed as through a utilitarian lens of being discarded or under the very dangerous type of phrase of quality of life. And we affirm the dignity of the person. We affirm the value of life from conception all the way to natural death in every human person. That's not a popular political point of view. That's what we want to be about here at Breadbox. And not that we're perfect by any means. If you listen to the show, you'll know how we stumble along in our own faith. While we're glad there is the sacrament of confession and all the rest, but we want to be a little bit different in that we are walking together toward Jesus, toward his church, and toward a deeper application of his grace in our lives and in the lives of others. So if you want to support that, you believe in that, go to breadboxmedia.com. You can also be a friend of your favorite show. You can listen to all the various podcasts, different contributors from around the country. Check it all out. You can subscribe to Google Play, iTunes, or Podbean. 2017 is going to be a very important year for us here at Breadbox Media. My question of the day is inspired by this book I got Christmas Day from my wife, Silence, the novel by Shusaku Endo that is now a movie by Martin Scorsese. I'm hoping it's going to be released here in Lexington here in about a week and a half when it goes to wider release. As I said, it's a book about the horrible anti-Christian persecution that took place in Japan beginning in the early 17th century and continued on really through the 19th century. But my question of the day for today's show is this. As a priest in 17th century Japan, you were told by government officials that they'll stop brutally torturing three Christian peasants if you place your foot on an image of Jesus. What do you think is the right thing to do and why? 573-4BREAD-4 if you want to call or text. Email me, mikeallenshow@gmail.com, or post your response on Facebook or Twitter without trying to spoil too much for you. That is the, in many ways, the climactic moment in the book, Silence. The Portuguese priest, Father Rodriguez, who had gone to the land of the rising sun to find out the truth about his mentor, Father Ferreira, whether he had apostatized from the faith. Of course, a very dangerous proposition to go to Japan. He found himself ultimately captured and witnessing the brutal repercussions among the peasant Christians who lived there in very difficult conditions in Japan, and yet had found in the faith, had found in the Christian faith, a great source of strength and solace and dignity. But when they were captured, because the local officials were ruthless in seeking to purge Japan of any trace of this foreign religion as they saw Christianity, and they would, one of the tests that they would have of these peasant Christians to find out if they were indeed secretly practicing the Christian faith is that they would pull out this image called the fumie, and it would be an image of either our Lord on the cross, maybe a picture of the Blessed Mother cradling Jesus in her arms. It was a carving of sorts and a small wood-framed image. And they would say, if you're not a Christian, then you need to step on this image of Jesus. Step on the fumie as a sign that you're rejecting the faith. And there were those, of course, who did. In fact, I put on the show's Facebook page, there are still some of these fumie. You can see them in Japan, and I've got a picture of it, where you can see it's Jesus on the cross, his face worn smooth, no more distinguishing facial features, because his face has been worn smooth from all those who placed their foot upon it. There were others who refused. Some would place their foot upon it, and the look of anguish was so great in their eyes that the officials would step it up and say, okay, now we need you to spit on a crucifix and call the Virgin Mary a whore. And then oftentimes would expose other Christians who just could not do that. And of course, there were those who bravely endured torturous deaths because of their refusal to step on the fumier. Well, what makes it even more difficult in this story, and this happened evidently, but of course it's depicted in a sort of a historical fiction by Endo, is that this priest, Father Rodriguez, finds himself in a situation where the image is placed before him, and he's told to step on it, an act of open apostasy, of turning from the faith. And that not to save his own life, but while they're presenting him with this option, there are three peasant Christians who are being tortured via what was called the pit, in which they would dig a pit, and it would be filled with human excrement. And a person would be hung upside down by their feet, by a rope, into the human excrement, until they were about to stop breathing, their lungs filled with the filth, and then they would be pulled out again. It was a torturous death. They would even, because of the danger of blood rushing to the head, they would even make a small slice in the forehead of the one being tortured to allow the blood to release so that they would stay conscious through the whole experience. And so Father Rodriguez was told, you either step on the fumier, step on the image of Jesus. If you do that, these three peasant Christians who are suffering because of what you brought to this country, if you'll step on the image, these three peasant Christians will be saved. And of course, it's the whole question of this that really forms much of the controversy about this book. And I'm assuming, I haven't seen the movie yet, I'm assuming it's a faithful depiction of the story. Because what Rodriguez says is that he hears the voice of Jesus telling him it's okay to trample on the image, that just as he's been trampled underfoot by men for centuries, and this is why he came into the world, that Father could do this very thing. By the way, Father Rodriguez knew that the Japanese officials were not just playing around, because he had seen three peasant Christians killed because of his fellow priest's refusal to step on the image. Anyway, we'll get into this a little bit more here later in this hour, because it's a wow. I'll share some of the responses I've gotten on Facebook on this too. I wanted to touch really quick on sports, the 10 biggest sports stories of 2016, meant to get to this yesterday. This is the end of the year where you get all these lists. Here was Sports on Earth's top 10 sports stories of 2016. Number 10, Manning's career ends in the weirdest way possible, playing horribly but getting a Super Bowl championship. Number 9, Kevin Durant choosing the Warriors as his team of the future. Number 8, Jose Fernandez, the promising Miami Marlins pitcher, tragically killed. Number 7, Leicester City pulls off the most amazing upset championship ever. Soccer, really? Anyway, number 6, Villanova wins the best title game ever. Always nice to see the Tar Heels go down. Number 5, Muhammad Ali dies. Yeah, huge story. I'm surprised it's number 5. Number 4, the Rio Olympic heroes. Was a great Olympics, wasn't it? Number 3, Colin Kaepernick starts a conversation. Number 2, LeBron brings a title to Cleveland. Sorry about that, Alex. Warriors fan. And number 1, the Chicago Cubs win the World Series. I have not seen a sports story yet that didn't list that as the top story. The Billy Goat curse is dead. We'll be back in just a minute. This is the Mike Allen Show.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
We're
We're right at the bottom of the hour. Welcome back in to the Mike Allen Show here on this Tuesday, January 3rd. If you want to chime in on our question of the day, which is, again, you're a priest in 17th century Japan. Maybe to give it even more correspondence to the book Silence I just read, you've come in clandestine fashion to minister to the nascent Christian community there in Japan. You are from another country. You've been hiding. You've been finally captured. And in their attempt to purge the Japanese culture of any traces of the Christian faith, not only would do they are they threatening to kill you, but they actually want to do something that they think will be even more effective, and that is to have a priest apostatize, or to apostatize, is that the right word, to turn from the faith, to exhibit this turning by stepping on an image called the Fumie, an image of Jesus, in order to keep three Christians, peasant Christians, who you can hear their screams. They're being tortured mercilessly. But you are promised that if you step on the Fumie as a sign of your rejection of the faith, and they even tell you, look, you can believe what you want in your heart. No one's asking you to change what you believe. Just simply place your foot on the image, and we will spare the lives of these Christian peasants. What do you think is the right thing to do? 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4. As I said, Shisaku Endo's book, Silence, which now has made into a movie that I think pretty faithfully depicts the events of the book, has been a very controversial issue. What is the right thing to do in this circumstance? We certainly, as Christians, have a great tradition of martyrs who refuse to pinch incense and offer it to the Roman gods. For those who are willing to go to their death to refuse to comply with something in violence against their faith. What makes this situation perhaps a little bit unique is that it's not asking you to step on the Fumie to spare your own life, but the lives of others. Here's some comments we've gotten. Kyle says on Facebook, I'd step on the graven, he puts the word graven in parentheses here, I'd step on the graven image of Jesus for the sake of the three peasants who are the living image of Jesus. They matter to God. And what if the tortured peasants cursed God when they learned that I'd valued my profession over their bodily good? Also, I'd imagine that witness to the gospel to have more, not less integrity than the refusal to step on the art. Yeah, but my only retort to that, Kyle, is you can say, well, what if the peasants cursed God because they learned that the Father did not deny the faith for their benefit? But what if the peasants lost faith because they learned that their spiritual father apostatized? I mean, you have to understand, these were people willing to die for their faith. What would it mean to their soul to know that their spiritual father was willing? We could talk about symbolism all we want, but as Catholics, we believe in the significance of our physical actions. Our bodies are not illusions. We believe in the material world. I mean, that's part of the whole logic of the incarnation of Catholicism. What we do with our bodies matters. So I'm not sure that you can. I think it's as likely, if not more likely, the peasants would be devastated to learn that their spiritual father turned from the faith. Anyway, Brian says, I would not step on the image of Jesus based on three cultural factors. Feet are considered dirty in Japanese culture. It is considered extremely rude to even show the soles of one's feet. In the martial arts, to defeat an opponent by kicking with the feet would be a supreme show of contempt for and shaming of the enemy. I'm going to get back into Brian's in just a minute because I think this is very interesting as well. But this question provoking different opinions than I expected, actually, to be quite honest with you. Anyway, let's get into our What Were You Thinking? We're a little overdue for those. We span the globe to find examples of human beings not putting their best thinking foot forward. Right? So what do we have here? our first nominee is we're going to give to some people who decided that they would celebrate the new year by firing, this is in Kansas City, by firing guns into the air. But what they didn't realize is that bullets have a tendency to come back down. This in Kansas City, fortunately, no one was hurt. But there was a family who whose home was hit by celebratory gunfire 5 blocks away. Fortunately, it just hit a door. But come on, people. Calm down. Holster those weapons. Don't fire guns into the air. The second we're going to give to Nick Saban, actually. Well, Nick Saban and Lane Kiffin for deciding to part ways the week before Alabama tries to defend its national championship. Seen this story? Of course, Lane Kiffin, who had agreed already to become the next head coach at Florida Atlantic University. I mean, wow. I know you want to rebuild your head coaching career, Lane Kiffin, but Florida Atlantic? And of course, the rumors have been that there was increasing tensions between Kiffin and Saban, as you can imagine, two completely different personalities. But evidently, Kiffin, in an interview with Sports Illustrated, during this time of juggling both the Florida Atlantic head job and being offensive coordinator for Mr. Focus himself, Nick Saban, there were some things that he said, like, working at Alabama 3 years, it's kind of like dog years, he said. It's more like 21. Evidently, some of his words didn't sit well with Mr. Saban. So they've parted ways a week before they play a very talented Clemson team. So that's number two. But the winner, we're going to give to a woman. And again, no shock, it's in Florida. Pit bull named Scarface attacks Florida woman after she tried to put Christmas sweater on her pet. Okay, so listen, I'm not a huge pet fanatic. We have pets in our home, and I have affection for them to a degree. Never have quite understood the whole pet sweater phenomenon, but I get it. Okay. But if I had a pit bull whose name was Scarface, I think I'd think twice before putting the Christmas sweater on the pet, particularly if that pet was showing some hesitancy for the garment. So anyway, this woman, thankfully, is recovering well after the injuries to her arm after trying to put the Christmas sweater on her pet pit bull named Scarface. Goodness gracious. Anyway, if you've got your own nominee, we'd love to hear from you. 573-4BREAD-4, 573-4BREAD-4. You can email me, mikeallenshow@gmail.com. Again, back to this question of the day. So, you know, you are a Catholic priest in 17th century Japan, and they bring out this fumie image. Of course, the faith is illegal, and they are going to torture. They are torturing 3 peasant Christians unless you step on the image of Jesus as a sign, an outward sign of apostasy or rejection of Jesus. As they say, you don't have to change anything in your heart. Just step on the image and you will spare these peasants unspeakable pain. By the way, in the book Silence, the priest faced with this circumstance had already witnessed earlier his brother priest who had been captured, who was given a similar sort of situation. 3 peasant Christians were brought. They were tightly wrapped in a bamboo mat from neck to their feet so that they were immobile. And the priest was told if he did not step on the image, that there, as he stood next to a small bay, that these 3 peasant Christians would be taken out into the depths and pushed off the boat so that they would drown. And the priest refused, and one by one, Japanese pushed the peasant Christians off the boat in their little bamboo vests, and they sank. The priest himself, to his credit, dove in to try to save them, but he himself drowned in the process. So Now, Father Rodriguez in the book is faced with three Christian, peasant Christians who are being suspended in the pit with their feet in the air, their heads lowered into pools of human excrement. Some of the most brutal torture. And all he has to do to stop it is to step on an image of Jesus. What's the right thing to do? Brian says that he would not step on the image of Jesus based on three cultural factors. So he talks about feet, the significance of feet, to desecrate the person of Jesus by placing his feet on an image of him in Japanese culture and what that would mean. Number two, the concept of identity in Japan is a sense of collective identity belonging to a community, company, or entity greater than one's individual self. The theology of us being united in the body of Christ would be a natural fit with the Japanese culture. My decision would have to take into consideration the church's call to be faithful to Christ as his body, which is greater than our immediate circumstances. The peasants in that culture might even see me as renouncing Christ on their behalf, which would dishonor their suffering for the faith. We'll get to his third reason when we come back from the break. If you've got a comment, 573-4BREAD-4, you can email me, mikeallenshow@gmail.com.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app. Change the world.
Minutes before the hour, you're back on the Mike Allen Show on this January 3rd. Looking forward here in about 15 minutes to my friend Father Tom Galloway, Orthodox priest friend, who'll be back with us here during this Christmas season as we approach the Epiphany coming up here in a few days. My question of the day is, if you're a priest and you're a priest in 17th century Japan under a horrible season of persecution, you've been captured, you've been told to make the sign that other Christians are asked to make as a proof of your rejection of the faith in order to spare your life, stepping on the fumie, the image of Jesus. As I said on the show's Facebook page, I put an image of one of these fumie that you can see. This one, Jesus crucified, his face smoothed down so that it looks like a blank face from the many feet placed on his face during this season of persecution in the time of Japan. But you are told to put your foot on there, not as a rejection. In fact, here's actually in Shishaku Endo's book, Silence, which has me thinking a lot about this. The people who were presented with the fumie to step on it, they said this to them: the sooner you get through with it, the sooner you'll get out of here. I'm not telling you to trample with sincerity and conviction. This is only a formality. Just putting your foot on the thing won't hurt your convictions. As I said, what makes it even more difficult in the circumstance that I'm portraying to you is that it wasn't simply the decision to step on the fumie to spare your own life, but there are three peasant Christians who are being tortured unless you put your foot on the fumie as a sign of your rejection of Christ. Again, inside your heart, you can believe what you want, they say. But simply place your foot on the image and their lives will be spared. What's the right thing to do? 573-4BREAD-4 if you want to chime in. 573-4BREAD-4. You can email me, mikeallenshow@gmail.com. You can post a thought on Facebook or on Twitter. I'll get back into some of the other responses we've gotten here in just a minute. let's look back in history a little bit on this day, January 3rd, throughout the ages. 2017, as time marches on, what are some of the things that have happened over the years? 1431, Joan of Arc handed over to Bishop Pierre Cauchon. Sometimes the persecutions we face from outside the church are nothing compared to what we face inside the church. St. Joan of Arc pray for us and pray for all those who have been unjustly accused. In 1496, Leonardo da Vinci unsuccessfully tested a flying machine. Well, 400 years before the Wright brothers were at work there at Kitty Hawk. 1521, Martin Luther excommunicated by Pope Leo X from the Roman Catholic Church. You know, interestingly, there is a connection to the Protestant revolt, the Reformation, to the novel Silence, because part of what hamstrung the Catholic missionaries in Japan were the Dutch and the English who came in later and really slandered the Catholic community there. 1892, the birthday of J.R.R. Tolkien. Happy 61st birthday to Mel Gibson. Alaska Statehood Day. 58 years old today, Alaska admitted as the 49th U.S. state. Pope John the 23rd in 1962. Good old jolly Pope John. Never heard a fly, right? Excommunicated Fidel Castro. Just goes to show their limits. 1977, 40 years ago, Apple Computer Incorporates. You a Mac person or a PC person? I could probably be a Mac person if it wasn't for the absolute arrogance of Mac people. Sorry, I digress. 1980, happy birthday, actually, 37 today, David Tyree. And 36, Eli Manning. How ironic that they have the same birthday 1 year apart because, of course, they hooked up for one of the most colossal passes in Super Bowl history, the helmet pin catch when they beat the heavily favored undefeated Patriots back in the day. And then, let's see, 1996, the first flip phone, the Motorola StarTAC, goes on sale. Wow. Just 21 years ago. I've got an old slide phone. It's fancy, let me tell you. And let's see, on this day 20 years ago, Brian Gumbel co-hosted his final Today Show on NBC TV. Wow, that's hard to believe that's been 20 years. Anyway, 5734BREAD4 if you want to chime in. Some other responses we've gotten on this question about the Fumier. I was talking about Brian, who said he would not step on the image of Jesus based on three cultural factors. One, the significance of feet being considered dirty in Japanese culture, and to step on somebody is the ultimate desecration of them, and therefore to do so on an image of Jesus in that culture, much more significant than we realize. Number two, the concept of collective identity among the Japanese, and to the decision to step on the image of Christ more than just involving yourself, but might even be seen by the peasants as you renouncing Christ on their behalf. And number three, the role of honor to the Japanese can hardly be overstated. To maintain a life of honorable service and solidarity with one's family, community, or in this case, faith, would be of paramount importance. To die an honorable death rather than commit a shameful act has been repeated countless times throughout Japanese history. As a priest in that culture, I would be dishonoring myself, the peasants, the person of Christ, and the church to subject Jesus to shame. Mary says, would stepping on the image of Jesus being wrong be similar to Jews at the time of Jesus who wouldn't eat with unclean hands? I think I would step on the image, but it's a difficult question to answer. John says, I'm stepping hard without hesitation. Ending actual pain is more important than preventing imaginary suffering. Yeah, John, I don't know that the issue is that we think Jesus will literally suffer for our putting our foot on him. But I think it is a question of, you know, what we do with our matter, with our bodies matter. I don't think it's quite so easy to say, oh, it's just an image. Would the equation change if it was a consecrated host? I mean, seriously. I mean, this was kind of the idea that, you know, when you talk about the St. Thomas More incident with Henry VIII, there were those who begged him, implored St. Thomas More, who would not sign the oath of succession, that would not attribute to Henry VIII the headship of the church in England. But St. Thomas More, who was a thoroughly modern man, very erudite philosopher, he could have easily done the sort of mental gymnastics to justify, signing this statement and practicing the art of what we might call mental reservation, right? I mean, he was encouraged to do so, particularly by his daughter. Dad, believe what you want in your heart, but just sign the form. Don't die unnecessarily. And I think it could even be argued that this priest in the silent story, who's concerned about the immense suffering of his fellow Christians, did Thomas More not have a responsibility to care for the anguish and the grief of his daughter who would witness him being beheaded? And yet, we celebrate More, we celebrate the martyrs throughout the ages who refused to offer incense to the Roman gods. Can you imagine how easy it would have been, and some did, to say, well, we don't believe in those gods anyway. So, you know, why not just, you know, it means nothing to us. So why not just do this? Well, tell that to Polycarp. You know, tell that to the others who refused to submit. And so it's really, I'll be honest with you, I'm not so presumptuous to say, look, that I know I would do the right thing in that circumstance. You know, that if I heard someone being tortured and I was told that I could spare them torture, one of these peasant Christians, if I stepped on the fumier, I can't say. I think it's presumptuous to say that any of us, and in fact, you know, most of us go through our lives fairly comfortably for our faith. In another cultural circumstance, might find ourselves wilting under the threat of persecution. It'd be very presumptuous to say I know what I would do. But I think it's very, very hard to say that it's not that not stepping on the image would not be the right thing to do. As horrific as it is, and yes, why on a certain degree, I guess it would be possible to, in the secrecy of one's heart, love Christ while stepping on the image. But the very nature of the faith is, I mean, this is the whole difference we talk about in our culture between freedom of worship and freedom of religion, right? I mean, the faith is not simply a private enterprise. It involves one's whole person, the use of one's whole body. I like what Edwin wrote here on Facebook. He says, I think the right thing to do would be to refuse, but I'm not sure I'd have the strength to do it. And if I did, it might be because I was a callous person who was insufficiently moved by the suffering of others. So a person who apostatized might actually be a better and holier person than someone who held firm. Well, I'm not sure I go there, Edwin. Holding firm would still be the right thing to do. I agree. Anyway, again, I'm a little surprised. Deacon Dennis says the story reminds him of 2 Maccabees chapter 7, with the seven sons who refused to eat the pork and were killed for it at their mother's encouragement, even in her anguish. I don't know. Maybe Father Tom weigh in on this on the other side of the break. We'll be back in a minute. This is the Mike Allen Show.
Listening to Breadbox Media Podcasts. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.